Monday the 11th of January, Kophei Teves, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Plagued by Problems, Pharaoh and Philosophy.
Thank you very much. I'd like to commend everyone for coming here on this snowy and somewhat unpromising morning. Our subject, as we've heard, is Plagued by Problems, Pharaoh and Philosophy. The subject of philosophy is notorious for its amorphous nature. The subject matter is as wide as the heavens and as deep as the sea. And to a certain degree, in Torah circles, we don't ponder matters of philosophy as much as perhaps was the case at an earlier time. And why that is, maybe we can consider on another occasion. But I'd just like to start with a little anecdote, which is perhaps apocryphal, of a young man who was going out on his first shidduch date, and he was a bit unsure of himself, unaccustomed to the sort of repartee appropriate for the occasion, having never experienced such an encounter previously. His previous interaction was with a chavrusa, with a blat gemara. So he asked an older friend for some advice. So he says, look, you need to find some subject to enable the conversation to flow. He says, yeah, well, what do I speak about? So he says, well, first talk about family. You know, everybody's got a family, so it's interesting, it's relevant, it's something which everybody has, and you can talk, you learn about her that way. Good, family, yeah. What about, what else, what if it doesn't work with family? We'll talk about food. Everybody likes food, everybody eats food, everybody has their own opinions, you know, different kinds of cuisine. So you talk about food, it's also something that you can, you know, converse about. And what about if that runs out? So, okay, well, let's talk about philosophy. Philosophy has no end, you know, and no beginning and no end. You can talk the whole night about philosophy, and you learn so much about her, and this is sure to work. So he goes on the date, he thinks to himself, okay, family, food, philosophy. So he sit down, and the girl apparently is not exactly Miss Personality, so he says to her, tell me, do you have a brother? She says, no. So he thinks to himself, oy vey, you know, my first one is already gone. So he thinks, okay, what's the next one? Food. He says to her, do you like macaroni? She says to him, no. So he's gone through two-thirds of his repertoire, you know, and all the 15 seconds of the date to pass. So he thinks, philosophy. So he says to her, if you had a brother, would he like macaroni? So we're going to talk about philosophy today, and in a way, I feel that I should begin in the way Mr. Susharim does, that what we have to talk about today, what's on my agenda at least, is not any great chidush. It's a subject matter which has been discussed by the Gedolei Olam already, and I would suggest that any thinking student of the Torah, the Parshas that we're reading now, Shmos, Vayera, Bo, will also have contemplated at some point the problems that I would like to consider today. And those problems are the following. The problems essentially of predestiny and free will. There are two different forms of that problem, and I'm referring to the fact that the fate of the Mitzrim, the fact that the Mitzrim would oppress the Klal Yisrael, the fact that they would enslave them, the fact that they would exploit them, and the fact that subsequently they would be punished and called to account for what they've done, was already foretold. And as we'll see in a moment, this represents an interesting philosophical problem. Secondly, we have the fact that Paro is the great villain of the story. Paro is the one who oppresses Klal Yisrael in a most sadistic way, in a most unreasonable way, unreasonable even to the point of self-destruction. And herein lies the problem, because initially Paro is very stubborn, and Paro refuses to release them. But that only goes so far. After a certain point, as the Torah already foretells, Vani Akshes Lev Paro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevents Paro from releasing them. And here we've got a problem, because what have happened to his free will? If he hardens his own heart, so people are that way. It's something that we are not completely, it's not completely foreign to our experience either. But the point at which Paro apparently is prepared to let them go, But Hashem prevents Paro from releasing them and continues to buffet him and his people, then we have to wonder, Ma'olechko? So those are the two questions. And as I say, the Meforshim already deal with them, and Ramban and the Rambam are going to be our two primary sources that we will consider in trying to understand these two important and, I would say, repercussive philosophical problems. The source for the first problem is in Parshas Lech Lecha, is in Bereishis, in the brief span of Asarim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'gam es hagoy asher ya'avodu dan anochi. Yadoa teida, you shall know that your descendants will be foreigners in a foreign land. Baritz lehem va'anum ve'inum ve'ibdu osam arba me'os shana. There they will be oppressed and they will have to serve a foreign nation 400 years. V'gamas hagoy asher ya'avodu dan anochi. And the nation that they serve, I will judge them as well. They won't get off scot-free. Your descendants are going to be subjected to exile, but those who oppress them will also be called to account. So Ramban says, "Al derech hapshat yomer kasher danti es banecha begalus ve'inui alavon." Just as I will punish your descendants for whatever the transgression was, is a separate problem. Gamas hagoy asher ya'avodu adin al hachamas asher ya'asu lahem. They will also be judged because of the way that they have oppressed your descendants. In fact, the Ramban, Ranachon Beinai, Kitam Vegam, Afal Pisha, Ani Gazarti Al Zarach Alios Gerim Baaretz Lolahem, even though I have decreed regarding your descendants that they will be strangers in a foreign land, but nevertheless, Afal Pikin Eshpot Es Hagoy Esher Yavodu Al Esher Yasu Lahem. And they will not be absolved of punishment by saying that, well, we've only done what the divine command has instructed us. Because it says that they will be oppressed. Well, someone's got to do it. It's a tough job, but someone's got to do it. Well, we're doing it. Okay, so what do you want from us? And he says, "Vahatam kamusha amar hakosav v'kinesi d'Yerushalayim ulesion kina gadol v'ketzef gadol ani kotzef al hagoyim hasha'ananim." It's a pasuk in Zechariah. I am angry at the tranquil nations who are enjoying their indulgence and their wealth, and they exploit those who are weaker, and the reference here is to Klal Yisrael. Asher ani katzafti ma'at vehema azru l'ra'ah. This is the pasuk, if you want to remember one pasuk that encapsulates this approach, this explanation. It is this pasuk. Ani katzafti ma'at vehema azru l'ra'ah. I was a little bit angry at the Jewish people, says Hashem in the pasuk in Zechariah, Vehema azru l'ra, but they went far beyond my anger. In other words, they exploited the situation for their own benefit. V'omer katzafti alami chalalti nachalas. He brings a number of other psukim in this vein. So this is the approach of Ramban, which he elaborates on a little bit further. But along the way, he quotes the Rambam, because the Rambam has another approach. The Rambam has an alternative approach. V'harav nasan tam b'sefer hamada. In Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam writes, V'shelo gazar al ish yadua. The reason that the mitzvim are culpable is because Hashem did not instruct any particular nation or any particular person to be the one to carry out this decree. V'chol osam hamerim liYisrael ilu lo ratza kol echad mehem arushus b'yada. Every person or every nation that afflicts Klal Yisrael, no one said he had to do it. The permission was given to every person to not be the one to carry out that decree. L'fi shelo nigzar al ish b'yadua. Velonis Kenudvarav Etzli says the Ramban, I don't agree. So again, the explanation of the Rambam is that the reason the Mitzvim are culpable for what they've done is that even though it was foretold, it was decreed, it was predestined, it was part of the divine plan That's true. But it wasn't part of the divine plan that the Mitzvim should do it per se. The Mitzvim were not required to do it. No one gave them that responsibility. They chose to do it of their own accord. It says the Ramban, that doesn't convince me though. He says, V'lamiskinu dvarav etzli, sh'afil gazar she'echani kolomus yabri alehem, b'kach v'kach. Because even if there was a decree that some nation should oppress Klal Yisrael, v'kadam zev asag zerasa shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then a particular nation is the one who carries out the decree, zacha b'dvar mitzvah. So then they're the ones who have fulfilled the mitzvah. It may be so that it wasn't decreed that the Mitzvim should do it, even though, of course, Klape Shmai it was, but it wasn't revealed to Abraham that it would be the Mitzvim to do it. But nevertheless, the Mitzvim were the ones who were quick to fulfill the divine decree. Umatam bidvarav kasher yitzava hamelech, it's like if a king decrees, shiasu b'nei medina ploni masim min ha-masim, that the king decrees that a certain people from a certain province or a certain country should do a certain activity. Someone who can't be bothered says, well, let somebody else do it. The king has decreed, okay, he didn't say, God, I got to do it, let somebody else do it. So someone who has that attitude, of course, he'll be criticized for it. And the one who does it, so he's going to find favor in the eyes of the king, because the king has decreed it. And they themselves went to Mitzrayim. So they Klal Yisrael put themselves in a position where it almost was required for the Mitzrayim to carry out their part of the instruction, their part of the divine plan. So therefore the Ramban rejects the approach of the Rambam. So again, the Rambam says the reason that the Mitzvim are culpable is because nobody required the Mitzvim to do it. And the Mitzvim decided of their own accord that we're going to be the ones to do it. But says Ramban, well, that doesn't convince us, because on the contrary, if someone's got to do it and they're the ones who step forward to carry out the divine decree, then they should be praised for it and not called to account. About Atam Kasher Kasafti, says Ramban, the reason is what I've said, that they were too eager. They were they went beyond what the Torah requires. Va'avdum v'inu osam. That means they will work them and they will oppress them. Okay? But the Mitzvim went far beyond that. It doesn't say genocide. It doesn't say throwing their children into the Nile River. It doesn't say infanticide, suffocating the male children at birth. It doesn't say the back-breaking labor and the sadistic nature of the servitude. That is going far beyond the divine decree. He says, "V'dava haven ki aish nechta v'nechtam b'rosh hashana lahariga lo yina kei." Now he goes back to critique the Rambam again. "V'dava haven," and here he puts it in a wider philosophical context. "Ki aish nechta v'nechtam b'rosh hashana lahariga." Someone who it's decreed on Rosh Hashanah lo aleinu v'lo aleichem that he's going to be killed in a certain year on Rosh Hashanah, it's decreed. Klapei Shmaya. So that doesn't mean that the mugger or the highwayman, the brigand who kills him, is therefore going to be exonerated because it's decreed. Doesn't mean it at all. V'hu rasha ba'avono yamus. He is a wicked person and he'll be taken to task for what he's done as well. V'damu miyad harotzech yivukash. Aval kasher teitze hagzera al pi navi, yesh ba'ose osa dinim. But if a navi says that a certain person is supposed to do it, or a certain nation is going to do it, so then that's something else. And then, but here, the decree did not specify who's going to do it. And therefore, says the, I don't want to confuse them. Says Ramban, the reason that the Mitzvim are punished is because they went far beyond what they were supposed to do. Aval im shama ha-mitzvah Vaharad also lesina olishloloso yesh ala onesh kihu lachet niskaved. Then he adds a further thing as well, that even if the Mitzrim were carrying out the divine decree, but they did not do it for that purpose, they did it for their own purposes. And sometimes a person's kavana can make all the difference. So the Mitzrim did not see themselves as instruments of the divine plan. On the contrary, the Mitzrim exploited their Klal Yisrael for their own purposes, and as we've said already, in a sadistic way, in a way that goes far beyond the extent of the decree. This is the approach of the Ramban in explaining this problem. Now, what about the Rambam? So the Meshech Chachma also explains the Rambam. The Rambam also has the same kasha as the Ramban, by the way, where the Rambam says, well, the decree didn't specify who's going to do it, so therefore they shouldn't have been the one to do it. So the Ramban and the Ravid both ask, well, whoever does it first, there was to be praise. Says the Meshech Chochma, the Haramban Heri Chaldiver Harambam Shilun Yiradvarav Beinav Shima Sa Acher Ki Mitzvah Hashem Yisbarach Halahu Zariz V'Niska. Whoever does it is to be praised. So he says the Ramban's comment would be compelling. Ilu Amar Kasabel Shon Tzivui V'ya Avdu Bam Hagoyim. Hashem never told Avraham that the Goyim should oppress them. It was only Sipur Dvarim. And he says this is an important difference. Hashem never told anyone that a certain nation should oppress Klal Yisrael. The nevuah to Avraham Avinu was only that a certain nation or some nation will oppress them. And he says that makes a big difference. Nobody told anyone. Hashem didn't tell any nation to oppress Klal Yisrael. Hashem only foretold that it would happen. So therefore no one can say, well, I'm carrying out the divine decree. Not so. There's no divine decree. Hashem is merely foretelling what will happen. He's not instructing anyone to do it. Aval kan amar derech sipur v'avdum v'inu osam v'lechein nanchu, and that's where they were punished. Shemin hadin ein rishayin ben noach. Now he goes on further. He says, you know what? The Mitzrim should have been the last ones to oppress them. Why? Because of Yosef. They should have akara satov. He says the Mitzrim have a debt of gratitude, and he says to whose haru al hadinim ubifrat liyos kufuye tova shehem nisashru me Yosef. Mitzrayim became wealthy because of Yosef. Not only was Mitzrayim saved from the peril of the famine because of Yosef, but the wisdom and the administrative skill of Yosef ensured that Mitzrayim actually became very wealthy as a consequence, because the people of Canaan and surrounding lands had to come there to buy their provisions. So therefore, Egypt became a great economic superpower because of Yosef, and therefore they should have been the last ones to exploit the family of Yosef in that way. And he alludes here to what the Ramban says later on. An interesting comment of Ramban in the Pasuk says, in Dvarim, Lo Yavo Amuni Umavi, I think he said, say, Lo Yavo Amuni V'Moavi B'Kal Hashem, Ador Asiri, etc. Al Dvar Asher Lo Kidmo Eschem B'Lechem U'V'Mayim. Because you were on your way out of Mitzrayim, and they didn't provide you with lechem u'mayim. Says Ramban, "Banir elai ki akasu hirchid shnei ha'achim ha'ila." So of course, all the Mefarshim ask, well, which nation did greet Klal Yisrael with lechem u'mayim? I mean, who were the great people? Who were our great friends? Was there anybody who came out to greet us in that way? Nobody did. So why is Ammon and Moab in particular, why are they singled out? Ador Asiri lo yavo. Because they didn't bring you bread and water. So Ramban says, "Vanirei like Yaakov, hirchig shnei ha'achim ha'ile shahayu gemulei chesed me Avraham." Those people, Ammon u'Moav, had a debt of gratitude, because how did they even come into this world? Because in the merit of Avraham, their parents were saved from the upheaval of Sodom, and even prior to that, when Lot was captured, Abraham went and rescued him. So therefore, they should have had a debt of gratitude. V'skuso shalcham Hashem mitocha afecha, v'ayu chayavim lasos tovim Yisrael, v'heim asuim hem ra'ah. So therefore, it's interesting in halachic terms, the Meshech Chachma seems to say that the principle of Hakara Satov is part of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. It's part of what we might call natural law. And the Egyptians abused that, so therefore they are held accountable. And this is what the Rambam means when he says that nobody ever told the Mitzrim that this is your job to do. And they should have dafka said, well, we're not going to do it. Chas v'shalom. Hashem says someone's going to oppress them. Okay, let somebody else do it. We're not going to oppress them, but on the contrary, they did oppress them. They exploited them for their own benefit and for their own purposes. So this is how the Mefarshim deal with the problem of the foretelling of the oppression of Klal Yisrael, and why Ganas Hagoya Sheyavodu Dan Anochi. But now let's turn to the second problem that we mentioned. The problem of the Vaniach Shes Leif Paro. So here again, we have the Ramban, and it's also the Ramban and the Rambam, although here it's not exactly Machlokas. You have a nice thing, you don't have it so often in the Mefarshim, in my experience. He says, "V'hine pirshu b'sheila sheyishalu hakol." The question that everybody asks. It's the Rambam asks it in Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam also in Shmona Prakim deals with it. We'll see that shortly. Ibn Ezra and others. Im Hashem hikshes libo ma pisho. If Hashem has hardened his heart, so what's his transgression? V'yesh bo shnei ta'amim u'shnehem emes. That's what you don't see so often in the Mefarshim. I mean, you see, yeshlomar v'yeshlomar. It's nice, the Ramban says, there are two different approaches, u'shnehem emes, and they're both true. Now, what's remarkable here, and we'll see in one moment, that there are two approaches which Ramban suggests, and he says they're both true. It's fascinating, they're actually opposite of one another. They're complete opposites to one another, the two approaches. And the Ramban says, Shnehem Emes, as we know, there are many pathways in understanding the Torah, and they can coexist. Says the Ramban as follows. Ha'echad ki paro berisho asher asa l'Yisrael ra'os gedolos chinam nischayev limnoa mimenu darchei tshuva. Okay, the problem is, how could Hashem harden the heart of Paro? And if he has hardened his heart, how can he punish him for it? We have a principle which lies at the very basis of our understanding of life itself, and that is human free will. Hashem has given Bechira to every human being. And it's only because a person has Bechira that he can be rewarded and punished in accordance with his behavior. It doesn't make sense. It's somehow offends our sense of justice that a person should be punished for something for which he had no choice. Onus Rachmana Patra, you could say, in halachic terms. But even in philosophical terms, how can a person be rewarded for something which he did, in which he had no choice, and all the more so punished for in a similar vein? This is the problem. So says the Ramban that Paro berisho asher asal Yisrael raos gedolos chinam nischayv limnoa mimenu darchei atshuva. And although he says it only in those few words, he elaborates a bit further, but the real source where it's elaborated more fully is in the Shmona Prakim of the Rambam. You know, the Rambam, as a young man, he was still in his 20s when he wrote Perush HaMishnayos. Perush HaMishnayos is a monumental achievement. It was the first time anyone, as far as we know, undertook to comment upon the entire Shas, entire Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. And the Rambam did it, as I said, in his 20s, and he did it while he was traveling from place to place, when he was under terrible strain. It's almost unbelievable how a person of such youth, under such circumstances, fleeing for his life with his family and without his family, could write such an accomplishment. It's most extraordinary. The Perush on Pirkei Avos has an introduction, which we call Shmona Prakim. And in that work, he deals with a number of very important philosophical matters, and this is one of them, and he takes this up. And he says, Avala Amru V'chizakti Esleif Paro. By the way, the Rambam wrote Perush HaMishnayos in Arabic, in Judeo-Arabic, and it was translated into Lashon HaKodesh by Al-Kharizi and by others in a very inconsistent and frankly inadequate way. And that's why the Mefarshim, the Rishonim, and many of the Achronim don't quote the Rambam Perusha Mishnas very much, and when they do, they often struggle with it, because the translations were inconsistent, sometimes unavailable, and not always very reliable. And that's why in the 1960s, a very important breakthrough was accomplished by Rabbi Yosef Kafach, who published a new translation from the Arabic, in a new translation into Lashon HaKodesh. There's a whole story about it, which I'll tell you another time, about the manuscript of the Sassoons, but we'll say that for another occasion. It's not my brief today. So I'm reading from this Kapach translation, which is a more lucid Hebrew translation. Aval Amru v'chizakti eslev paro, v'chakach enisho v'hishmido. Hashem says, I will harden his heart, and then he subsequently clobbers him. I'm going to explain an important principle. And basically he says like this: a person can be punished for his transgressions in all different ways. Sometimes a person can be punished in his financial circumstances, or a person can be punished in his personal circumstance, or a person can be punished in his physical well-being. And he says a person, according to the transgression, in a way that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can determine, can be punished in all different ways, whether in this world or in the next world. And he says, "Ve'ein bekach zarus." There's nothing strange about this. Ki nomar ki yesh Hashem ma'anish es ha'adam bekach, shelo yeshuv v'lo yeshiru lo ha'bechira b'tshuva. Sometimes the punishment for a person who has transgressed so grievously can be that he is... The faculty of free will can be taken from him. Just as a person can lose his ability to see, or he loses his ability to perambulate, to walk, or he can lose his ability to hear, or he can lose his ability, lo aleinu, to think. All of these happen, whether because of illness, or because of old age, or because of punishment, who knows? We're not vouchsafed the divine algorithm to know who and why, and for what reason. But all of this is part of the human experience. Sometimes, says the Rambam, a person who sins grievously, his punishment will be that the capacity for tshuva is withheld from him. The most sublime gift that Hashem has given man is his free will, his bechira, and sometimes a person can sin to such an extent that his bechira is taken from him. That can be his punishment. And the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva, he says this is not very common, this is very rare. Generally speaking, a person does have free will, and a person is punished in accordance with the way he exercises his free will. But sometimes a person who consistently exercises his bechira in a way of rishus, in a way of wickedness, in a way of exploiting, in a way of sadistic exploitation of Klal Yisrael, this, as was the case with Paro, his punishment is that he loses his bechira. And then he becomes just a puppet on a string. And then he becomes an instrument merely for the divine control over human affairs. And in Taki, he lost his free will. And therefore, the first five Makos, it says, Ve'chazek leiv paro. V'lu shilach ha'am. But the last five, it says, Vanich kizakti es leiv paro. So that for the punishment that Paro received until the end of his life was because of the way he exercised his free will up to and including the first five Makos. That was his punishment. After that, his sin was so grievous that he was not given the possibility of doing tshuva anymore after that. And this is how, says the Rambam, we can understand the fate of Paro, that how it can be that he was punished even though his free will was removed from him. That was part of the punishment, that the loss of his Bechira. But he wasn't punished in a capricious way. He had ample opportunity to exercise his Bechira, which he did, always l'ra. This is the way the Rambam explains it, and the Ramban quotes him and endorses him as well. What about the other possibility? The other possibility, and here's the beautiful irony, the insight into the Derech HaTorah, the Meforshei HaTorah, that there's another possibility was exactly the opposite. Not that Paro lost his free will, but just the contrary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and here the Ramban already says it, but it's beautifully expressed in the Sforno. Sforno, without quoting Ramban, actually Sforno never quotes anybody. He never mentions the name of his sources. It's an interesting phenomenon. Never quotes any of his sources by identifying them. But the Sforno says, "V'ein safek sheluli hachbadas halev haya paro mishalech es Yisrael bli safek." You know what? He says, there's no doubt that if Hashem had not hardened the heart of Paro, he would have released them. Why would he have released them? Because he would have been unable to endure the suffering. He wasn't a fool, Paro. He may have been a megalomaniac. He may have been defective in many ways, morally and in other respects, but he was surely not a fool. And in case he was a fool, so his own minister said, "Haterem teidab ki avta Mitzrayim, have you not noticed? Haven't you realized that Egypt is going to be destroyed because of your stubbornness? Let them go!" And Paro wouldn't do it. Says Sforno, of course any normal person would have let them go. But he would have let them go only out of self-interest. Not out of tshuva. He would not have released them out of a recognition, as he eventually did say, although he retracted that as well. Hashem atzadik v'ani v'ami harasha'im. Hashem is righteous and we are wicked. He changed his mind after that as well. But he would never have done it because of that recognition. He would have done it only out of self-interest. He would have released them only, like the mafia, you make him an offer, he can't refuse. Okay, so he would have let them go. But would that have reflected any moral growth on his part, any transformation, any recognition of his inherent wickedness, and the righteousness of Klal Yisrael and the righteousness of Hashem? No, it would not have. He would only have done it out of self-interest. Lo al tzad ha-tshuva ha-chna la-kel yisbarach shishchanem mi-yos moret, that he will regret his posture of rebelliousness, but rather ela al tzad ha-yoso bilti yachol lisbol odes tzoras ha-makos. He would have released them only because he can no longer endure the suffering of the plagues. And therefore, when Hashem hardened his heart, it's not that he removed his bechira, which is maybe the Parshat Pshat, and the way the Ramban and the Rambam first suggest, but rather he hardened his heart as a way of fortifying his heart, as a way of enabling him to withstand the plagues, so that he would then be able to release them out of a feeling of contrition. In other words, out of in a spirit of tshuva. So according to this approach, which the Ramban, as we said, endorses as a Shnehem Emes, according to this approach, the whole question disappears. It's not how could Hashem suspend his free will, it's just the opposite. Hashem has enabled him to somehow become insulated against the pain of the Makos so that he could still exercise his free will to release them and to demonstrate his recognition of the righteousness of Hashem. So in this way, we have resolved two of the interesting philosophical problems that emerge from this parasha. First, the question of predestiny. So we've discussed how the mitzvah could be punished if it had all been foretold. And secondly, we've explained how Hashem could harden the heart of Paro and apparently remove his free will. According to the Ramban, he removed his free will as a punishment for what he did in the early part of his career, when he still had free will. And according to the alternative approach, also found in Ramban, elaborated in Sforno, he didn't suspend his free will at all. On the contrary, he fortified his free will in order to give him the opportunity to do tshuva, which unfortunately he apparently failed to do. I just want to end very briefly by saying there is a medrash that in Pirkei Eliezer, that the Paro of Mitzrayim did survive. He almost came back from the dead. He did survive, and he was the same Paro that Yonah met centuries later in Nineveh. So according to that remarkable medrash in Pirkei Eliezer, he actually did do tshuva, so it wasn't all for naught, it wasn't all futile. He did at the last moment, he must have been a good swimmer, I suppose, because he did survive, and he made his way to Nineveh, and finally he did do tshuva a bit belatedly, so there's hope even for the rest of us as well.